Blog Talk Radio.
I like being
send a message to the wrong person.
Hello. This is T. Nathan, and welcome to Keep Calm, Let's Discuss Race. We have
Melinda Medina
and Reginald Virgil,
and we are here to talk to you tonight on the Keep Calm, Let's Discuss Race platform, our inauguration show.
Yes.
So thank you for joining us. And let's get right into it. We have several things we're going to talk about tonight, but we're going to get right into it.
Several things.
Yeah. We're going to get right into it with bottom jeans.
Bottom or okay.
Yeah.
We talk about we've had the it was a little over a week ago. We heard the story of a man being gunned down in his apartment in Texas, Dallas, Texas, by an off-duty officer, and this off-duty officer by the name of Amber Geiger, she shot, as you would like to say, Mr. Fairley, bottom jean. I would say Boham, or both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those caramel, but, we'll say for Mr. Jean, he was shot in the comfort of his own home.
Comfort of his own.
And, you know, it's crazy because, like, you know, a lot of people say, like, you know, they're going around the fact, like, oh, I wonder what possessed her to do this. Or why did she do that? Or what did he do? Or what was the chemistry between them? Why was it that she shot? What? No. The fact.
Let's establish something first and foremost, right? He was murdered. That's the going out with the euphemism. He was shot. He was murdered in his own home. And like we said, you were saying about people keep talking and about what did the, you know, he must have did something or she was a jilted lover or whatever, you know, that, all any other irrelevant.
Something wasn't right.
Yeah, anything else. All that matters is he was murdered. And to me, at the end of the day, there's another black man murdered by the hands of policemen in this country. Justification, we always look for justifications when cops murder somebody. But when people of color, something happens, the justification is usually, oh, they were bad, it was a dope deal going bad, and that's it. That's what you think. But Melinda, as a woman,
yes,
a woman, when you heard this story, like, you know, this is September the 6th.
Right.
You know, we are like 12 days out from the story, and he has been buried, and I'm going to get into the smear campaign that's now going on.
Right.
But when you first heard that story, did you think any of those things of a woman that, you know, it must have been a reason why this woman went to his house and shot him?
No, I did not. I thought, how did this woman confuse her apartment with somebody else's?
Right.
That was my first initial reaction. And it really does upset me that people are wanting to blame the victim and saying, well, what did he do to provoke that? And I don't think, I mean, how dare we have that kind of thinking about somebody's life, right? That it's not, that they would think that way is beyond me.
Yeah, and you get to the point, like, and people were talking about this, and I say, what? Let's stick to her first story. Her first story was she accidentally walked into the wrong apartment, and I don't know, but I have walked in. How do you get into the wrong apartment? And the door, she said the door was ajar at one point, and the door was locked, and she called him in. You know, all these stories are coming out. So you walk into the wrong apartment.
She got up the elevator, so she obviously pressed the wrong floor number, too.
And I'm going to get into that. I want to say all that. So how does all this become possible?
Right.
You walk into the wrong apartment.
Yeah.
You shoot somebody.
Hold on. You already shooting somebody. You what? You walked in the door shooting? You walked into the wrong apartment.
You didn't turn the lights on.
Yeah, what is it? How was you aiming that way on the dark?
When do you realize that? When do you realize that? Oh, this is not my apartment.
I don't know. Let's say they all painted the same color. You know that sound. The couch.
They have the same couches.
They have the same couch.
They were the same furniture.
The same furniture.
Like,
what is it? Furniture is us.
Apparently, one of her stories, she says.
I like the way you put that.
One of her stories, she says that she. After she shot, she turned the light on. So I'm like, so you walk into your apartment and the first thing you do is not turn on the light if it's dark. That doesn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah, you just shoot them figures in the dark. Now, let's make it. Now, you know how I hate surprises, right? I
right.
hope God has them. But, you know, I've never had anyone surprise me in the dark in my house and I shot them.
Right.
What? Okay.
Yeah, she must not have no one sleeping over her.
If someone was breaking her apartment, you know, I can't even. I don't even.
Yeah, we're sitting here, and you're trying to wrap your mind around it. It was murder.
It is.
It was murder. And then you get to the, like I say, you get to the point. Now let's get to the other point of the matter.
The other point.
After he's dead, there's a warrant, a search warrant issued on the dead man.
On the victim. Yes.
On the dead man, there's a search warrant, and the news. I'm looking, and I'm on the web one day, and the news alert comes on, and it says, marijuana found in Jean's apartment.
10.4 grams of marijuana.
Found in his house.
What does
that? Excuse me!
What does it have to do with anything?
What? He's dead.
Right.
It's nothing more than a smear campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, apparently, like they say, they must have had a bad relationship. Who knows? They it was a bad breakup, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, we
everything. Yeah.
You know.
We have two can keep a secret, one is dead. Okay, and right now all we have are her life. I mean, her story. We don't have an independent witness coming forth and saying any of the things she's saying, so she has no collaborating evidence. But my thing is, she was allowed to go 3 days after being questioned, after you have left a murder scene, there's someone dead that you did not shoot in the performance of your duty, and you're allowed to answer questions, and you slept in your bed that night in the same apartment complex.
How could you sleep, though?
You have a problem because you're not a murderer. You're thinking like, how can I see myself? You're not a murderer. You don't walk into the wrong person's house.
No,
what if the role was reversed? What do you think would have happened?
What role? That he shot an off-city cop and her walking in the wrong apartment?
If it was him that shot.
It'd be two dead people.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because he'd been dead by five.
Right.
Yeah, and the shooting took place at 4:50.
What hashtag
facts? Hashtag dead by five. You say this, and I say in this country we have a problem with the police department. We have a problem with unarmed people of color being systematically gunned down, and this is just one more egregious act on a list of egregious acts.
It's just the fact that they didn't even paint her as a criminal of any type. You know, when given an adjective to something to fit her description of her characteristics, how you would turn on TV and you would, or if you even read articles in newspaper, how I describe black people that have cooked.
Yes. Have you seen a mugshot of her yet?
Was she smiling?
Have you seen one yet?
I haven't seen one.
That's not a mugshot. That's just a bad picture.
Okay.
It's a bad picture. But you know, when people of color are involved in crimes like this, the first picture you get is either a previous mugshot or the present mugshot.
Yes.
But when other people are, you know, involved in these crimes, we get family pictures of happy times together. And you remember when Trayvon Martin? You remember when Trayvon Martin was shot?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the picture they wanted to post everywhere first?
When you were in the hoodie?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or when Michael Brown was shot, they post the most violent picture they can post of him. See, we don't get the Snow White and Seven Dwarfs picture.
Right.
We get the Big Bad Wolf picture.
Yep.
And that is indicative of how we think.
It's like the man who killed his family in Colorado and his pregnant wife. They got all the pictures they had were... happy family.
Big happy family.
The beautiful house. That's what you had. But we want to see afterwards. We want to, the same depiction and picture that is drawn for black people in this country, it needs to be shown as an image for anybody else who gets possessed. But that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen.
It's like
I'm
trying to publicly.
What planet are you living?
Draw compassion, right? That's what they're trying to do for this man. I mean, that's what it felt like to me. Like, they're trying to draw some kind of compassion for this white man who killed his family by posting these pictures of him and his family smiling.
Where did it go wrong? And just like in Amber's case, I haven't seen a mugshot yet. And then this is what gets me.
How do they know she didn't have weed in her car? She's moved out of the complex, by the way, too, right?
She's moved out. We don't know if management asked her to leave or if she moved or what. I'm like, I don't know what kind of bond she's on. Because it was only $300,000, and she was only charged with manslaughter.
Right.
And she bailed that out in a couple of hours. After being on free for 3 days, she processed and bonded out within 3 hours. But now let's get to an incident that occurred three days ago, protesters in Dallas took to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically, 9, 14 of them or so, and they basically got out their cars and protested in the street, right? They were still in jail this morning after they were arrested three days ago.
Right. Point proven.
And they were held without bond.
Without bond, yes.
So this is what you're telling me in this country. You're telling me that if I want to get out of jail and get home by lunchtime, I should just murder somebody and be white. Because if I murder somebody, yeah. Or even if I was accused of murdering somebody, I would not be home by lunch. As a matter of fact, if you came to my house and there was somebody breaking in my house and I shot them, and I would be taken to the police station. I guarantee you.
Just like that woman who shot her ex-husband because, you know, she was a victim of domestic abuse, and she shot him in Florida, where it's on ground. And so, like, she was a legal firearm carrier, and she still is going to be charged for his death.
Yeah. Because that is women and people of color, and women of color, especially. What do you have? And anything you think about this, right? You think about the cases of Fernando Castillo and Tamir Rice and Stephen Clark, who was murdered in his grandmother's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You think about it, and it gets more egregious. And what about the Jessica? Justice, what's his name? And I would have killed Autumn, the video I was talking to you about.
The
Jesse Hill.
And I wear snow, which must have been a bunch of when the officer killed the Hispanic woman at her talking about the dog was attacking, and his defense was to use a gun on a dog that attacked, and he accidentally shot the woman. So
accidentally.
And he pulled his firearm out where there was a child. That was most disturbing to me.
When we look at these examples of police brutality, it's really, for us, across the country, everywhere.
I want to point out her name is August Steele.
August Steele. His name
is only relevant because he still was not charged with anything in her murder. And if you go to our Facebook page, Keep Calm, Let's Discuss Racism, and you go to their page, you will see the video that was recently released by the Des Moines Register and the police there, and how his story does not add up with the video, the official body cam video. But like I said, he was not disciplined. He was not fired. There was a wrongful death suit that the city, I believe, paid $2 million in. But basically, there was no one held accountable.
Wait, did it say that that was her son?
Her last words before she died was, "No, my son," before he shot her.
And where was the shot? Because we were watching the video in there.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, she shot him in the chest. Shot her in the chest. And then they start to proceed to do compression on her chest. And if you see the officer's video, this is what got me, too. That part got me, Melinda, when you talk about it. But what got me also was he said, "I'm going to prison.
I'm going to prison.
Yeah.
That was his words.
He didn't care about the life he had taken from a child who will no longer see his mother.
He shot her in front of her son.
Yeah, like, he's worried about going to prison.
And just think about it. Like I said, do you respond to a situation, you see children there, the dog's out there, the husband and the wife are out there, and a bit they were kind of loud, but you walk up pulling your gun, and then you see the dog that they're talking about, and it fits in a child's arm. I mean, I'm not saying that, but the idea that if you were shooting that far away from you at a dog, that you strike the woman you're supposed to be there to help, something's wrong with this picture. What are we training our police to do? This is one more case of we as people of color and women are not being protected and served in our community.
You're right.
This is atrocious. You look at the 2018 database. That the Washington Post put out. 722 people have been killed by police officers in the line of duty. Thus far,
722
since January 1st, 2018
till this day.
So, as a matter of fact, let me correct that.
Are the numbers still going up as we speak? Can you see where, like, you know, where they just add a count or something?
They do have a count, but this is the count up until this moment. This is not majority report. We can't see what the count is tomorrow.
And we're supposed to shoot, right? Because they have to feel their life is threatened.
No. Yeah.
But also,
the life of someone present is threatened.
But if you look at the statistics and the numbers, it tells you off of the FBI database as well that only 38 officers have been killed since January of this year. 38 officers have been killed by a firearm, just 38 of them. And look at that record number from 707 and only 38. They get most likely, most officers get killed in accidents.
Yes, because they can't drive or they're trying to speed and go somewhere and have a wreck. We witnessed that the other day on 49 when an officer turned on his lights just to get into traffic, just to get into the flow of traffic. I mean, but like you say, Melinda, if you're fearful for your life. Like you say, you would think that with these kind of numbers,
mm-hmm.
that there would be some injuries somewhere, right?
Right.
But no, it seems like the mentality. And then I can break this down all kinds of ways, right? Let's look at rates of the number I just gave.
Keep
right?
going.
Yeah, keeping calm. Of the 722 I just gave you for the most recent report I have, 129 of them are black, 99 are Hispanic. Now, this is the thing that gets me. So 281 are white, but we have two categories here that I have no clue what they mean, because 23 are other,
mm-hmm.
and 190 are unknown.
So, all right, I have a question. So that is a demographic broken down by race.
That is a demographic. What is an unknown? Aliens?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. What we have unknown. So, yeah.
They're not white, so we're going to put them in the people of color.
I mean, we still have under the race, like, check off. There still says other there.
Yeah, but these are dead people. They didn't check off anything. So what do we put them on? It's not like the dead man said, oh, let me reach up and I will check off others. Yeah. He's dead. I'm sorry. You get there, you pull up on the scene, you got a dead body there. What is it? Is it white, non-white? That's it. But this is the thing. You can identify white, and you can identify black, and you can identify Hispanic. But we have two categories. And maybe other, you mean, you know, you have island Pacific or you know, indigenous or something like that. But what is unknown? If there's unknown, I'm counting them as people of color. So we're going to add 190 to the other figures I gave you all.
Right.
So, and I'm saying this because people of color make up, black people make up like 14% of the population of this country.
Mm-hmm.
Hispanics make up slightly more than that. But we are being killed by the police at a disproportionate rate
mm-hmm.
to our population.
And if we're not being killed, then it leads to incarceration. So
that's a whole other thing. It's like, and I had someone recently tell me, because we were talking about Ruby Bridges, and she helped integrate the schools in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 64 years old. You know, when we talk about people say, you're always using the plight of your ancestors to.
You mean
my grandma? Yeah. But she's 64 years old, and she was one of the first people to integrate a school in Louisiana at 6 years old. Kathy Eglin, who we personally know, was one of the first people to integrate a school in Mississippi in Hattiesburg. But the thing about it,
they don't teach that in history books. So
they don't teach that, but this is the thing about it. I posted something about that, and we were talking about it, and this one person made a comment, because I made it in the post. I said that the federal marshal had to escort her to school, basically, for the first 6 months of school, almost first year, and how she was the only person in the classroom. And like I say, people act like these are just ancient histories, not like, you know, I know people older than 64 years old.
Right.
You know, I'm almost 64 years old. So you get to that point, and you, 14 years, okay. All right, that's close enough.
I like to say this to me.
So, but this is what I keyed on. So the federal marshals has to escort to school. So this person says to me, because they want to camouflage my post into an endorsement of police doing the civil rights. And the names have been changed to protect the innocent, right? And you want to camouflage my comment into an endorsement of the police department.
Right.
And he was talking about how, you know, this is these people putting their lives on the line, and we are therefore enabling us to do things in the civil rights movement, and nobody wants to speak up for the civil rights movement and what police did. And I said, okay, number one, these were federal officers that had to come to a city and to escort a six-year-old girl to school of color because it wasn't safe, and local law enforcement were not stepping up. Let me read his statement.
Please.
So sad that our country is that bad. How we ever move forward in our thinking is beyond some people's mind. I am just grateful that we move forward every day. We must continue to move forward religiously and fulfill each other's all races. Thank God for for the selfish men and women of law enforcement who are willing to do things that put them in harm's way. And let me finish. And he goes on to say, day in and day out, these people willingly stand between the good guys and the bad guys. But if you read this page, you would think it's a gang of murderous thugs who want to eliminate the black race. Because, of course, no person of color has ever had anything but nice things to say about law enforcement in the 50s and 60s, right? And I mean, you read that, and you like, that's what I'm saying. When people have to try to change the narrative to fit their argument, and it is so egregiously wrong. Because I also took the time to post a couple of pictures from the civil rights era of local cops and how they treated people of color during peaceful protests. Because everybody knows Selma, right?
Right.
Everybody knows Selma and how cops acted there. Everybody knows what happened here in Biloxi Beach on Bloody Sunday. And this is not, in just like Selma, this wasn't one or two times. This was three times when integration of the beach here under Dr. Gilbert R. Mason, senior, and the response of police and law enforcement and white people here was violent. It was violent. We have history of pictures of that. But I also posted some pictures from Birmingham, 1963, and how local police turned dogs on peaceful protesters, turned hoses on peaceful protesters. And then Melinda and I were talking, and you remember Melinda, I said, this isn't new to us.
Right.
You know, it's faster, because we hear about everything in seconds now instead of weeks.
Right.
But it's been this way with people of color. And they ask us, why don't we trust the police or why don't we act in accordance? But you look at this, you know, the videos that show that people say, and I hate it when people say, if you just follow their orders, nothing bad would happen to you.
If we wouldn't have resisted or if we wouldn't have talked back. And I'm just like, really? That's what you got out of the whole thing? I mean,
you have a dead man here. And your thing is, if you wouldn't have talked back, you wouldn't be dead. But it's not the police job to use excessive force in the first place.
To give somebody a life, I mean, like, to take somebody's life like that, like, sentence them to death over what?
Over what? Because last time I checked, you're supposed to protect and serve even those you think are in violation of a crime. Mm-hmm. But this is the thing to get me. I haven't said that. Mm-hmm. I understand that our society doesn't care about guilty people. Yeah, go ahead. I see the look on your face. Y'all can't see him in Radio Land.
I think you know the point. I know why cops are shooting at the people. Because that guy said that they take they're not selfish because of the job that they do and the work that they do. So what police officers do is when they get to work, they get mad because they can't think about themselves. They have to think about everybody else.
Yeah, no.
So they go out and shoot other people.
Yeah, no. See, you're doing the same thing. You're looking for justification. They're just murdering.
I think that's what it is. And what you were saying earlier was something we talked about earlier, looking at the civil rights posts and the pictures.
Right.
Especially what you posted. You know, it's funny how, you know, we'll post throughout the day about all types of funny and crazy stuff and people will laugh and comment under there.
But then
when you post real serious stuff, issues, it's like, you know, you can hear a needle drop in a whole other state.
That's why I get rid of those people. I only invite people to my page that are going to comment or engage. Once I go through and do maintenance on my page. And don't engage. Yeah. Are you posting just cute doggy cat pictures? Yeah.
What's been really troublesome for me is not so much the people that don't react, but the people that do, and you realize that they don't have the same view as you do, and you're like, you know that this affects you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like everything that's going on affects you right now. And instead of being on the right side, you are on the wrong side, and you're defending things that are atrocious. And like, so it's disappointing to me when I see people of color on that side of the spectrum, you know, think that it's okay for things like this to happen.
But
like Dr. King said, it is not the what we remember is not the actions so much of our enemies as in the silence of our friends or those who call themselves our friends or allies. Or allies.
Right.
Or, you know, they just kick you out the car because they don't like the car you drive. But, but just like you say, Melinda, it gets to that point where I think it's the same for me. Look at, you know, and we've had some run-ins with people that don't know better, and they say something, but you know where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, everyone who was burning Nike, I knew they'd just rather be burning crosses. I know who they are. I know who they are. They were burning their Nikes because they didn't have any crosses, and that's a statement.
It's just,
yeah, you're not burning now.
Hey, the only thing you burn is a friction from the bottom of my feet from walking. That's the only way to use
it. And Nike don't care. You already paid for them. It's not like you're paying for them and install the plan and you're not going to pay for them. But, you know, these are things, I don't know. To me, it's like somebody on our page that keeps commenting. I'm not going to mention his name.
You should.
Short Nathan. that is a racist.
Right.
But he keeps coming by and keeps commenting. But I know who he is and I know where I stand with him.
Right.
And it's like you say, it's the people that will see the most egregious thing and not address them or not say something that I really key on, especially when they call themselves, you know, we're on the side. We're helping you fight oppression. No, you're not helping me fight oppression.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fighting oppression. You're watching me fight oppression.
Right.
That is so true. That is so true. You're watching. And I think watching is just as, excuse me, watching and not and doing nothing is just as bad as actively doing something.
You know, we had a lady to tell us back in San Francisco when we were there just a week ago. A few days ago.
3 days ago.
Well, she told us this last week.
You missed it already, don't you? Not like a week ago.
About a month ago, I was in San Francisco.
It's like, okay.
She was telling us that we were talking about the fight against oppression and the colonizers and bringing justice to the system, which is causing traumatic harm to all of us. And that she said if there's anything she could do, if she has to sweep the floor, bring plates to people to help those in need, or anything that she can do to help, you know, whatever role she can play during the time of revolution, that she's willing to do that, you know.
Right.
So, and that was keystone when she said that.
Yeah.
I was like,
that was powerful because we were walking down the street. We were not, she wasn't even a participant at the action we were. Because we had to go walking and see neighborhoods that are impacted. But we were just walking down the street and she asked us if we were a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, how can I become a part of it? And that was so moving to me because that's somebody who is looking for what they can do.
Right.
Because they know sitting on the sidelines is not an option for them, but also realize that sitting on the sidelines does not progress,
which makes me wonder if this is somebody from the community, of that community, asking people who are not even from that area, how do I get involved? Then some kind of organizing is not really happening.
It could be, but sometimes we have a tendency, and I call it organizational elitism, that we reach out to only certain people.
Right.
And sometimes, but like we do, we don't do that. We go into the community and talk to the people themselves because we are other people. We live in these communities.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, sometimes I watch large organizations come into your community with a sponsored event and they have brought their people in or they have brought people in, but they haven't reached out to the community. And I'm not saying that that's so much at fault for me, but when I see allies come into our community and the first thing they come into our communities and they do is tell us what the problem is, like you don't live there and like you don't see the problem, or they tell you a problem that you'd be like, child, I wish that was the problem, or I wish we can deal with that when we get to it.
Right.
But I think
that
that's what I say. Well, sometimes I think I'll call it progressive or liberal elitism. And that is the fact that you think you know the community that you do not live in or do not even deal with until you have this guilt oh, we should do
something.
Or sometimes
they're not even a part of, right?
Right, or they don't even reach out to the people, like you said. I don't think it was that. In this case, I think the so-so and the Global Climate Change Summit that we went to, I think it was structured as a way, it was almost intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it didn't. Something fell through the hole. Now, don't get me wrong. It was beautiful. We had 30,000 people there on Saturday
doing
them all, and we had demonstrators, and that's great. But I think some of it is that we are missing some of the very people that we need at the table, even if they are just there to serve coffee because they want to do their part.
Right.
So I think a lot of some of that elitism is one of the things, and we were going to segue into and talk about what keeps us divided.
Right.
You know,
you know, I'll say with keeping us divided.
Okay, let's qualify what we mean by keeping us divided first.
Yeah, before I get to that, I was saying earlier with the post that you were putting up, which we were talking about the civil rights movement and all the atrocious things that happened in the past. How we talk about superheroes and we talk about those who we look up to. You know, every day, every time, listen, you guys, I'm finna go in my clowning mode. Every time I go from going on.
You mean take it off sometime?
No, but, you know, when I go places with all, you know, he'll show me around and I'll meet people. He's a pioneer back when I was growing up as a kid. You know, these are people.
As a child, not a baby goat.
yeah, he does that intentionally. Growing up. And when I think about it, you know, I thought about it today. Today I'm saying to myself, you know, these are the same stories my grandma would tell me, you know, when she would go march, when she would have to, when her brothers and her cousins, her family, they would, you know, they would get into altercations with colonizers. And she's telling these stories as if they were like comic book stories, like he's a hero. You know, that's how the way she told me, that's how I see it. So to me, whenever I see anybody in the civil rights or I hear about these stories of the events that happened and of people that were treated wrong and disproportionately, I think of them as superheroes. You know,
right.
The Batman, this is my Superman, she is my Wonder Woman, you know, this is the Green Lantern of my time. These are my superheroes. So, you know, that was a translation from something weird.
So the way history is told can keep us divided.
Right.
Right, because like the way you're saying, you know, with the civil rights heroes, the way you know you were brought up that way, so we can say the same thing about the Confederacy.
Oh, I mean, the Confederacy, you wound me.
I'm sorry, I know. I almost threw up in my mouth trying to say that, right?
Listen, can we make sure it's little c Confederacy?
Right.
Yes, I am. Violating all laws of English by capitalizing the Confederacy. The Confederacy. we got to be some kind of down
slope there. So that was a good point, and that would go back to defining what we need to define.
But I want an interesting point you raised because there's a villain. I think in every story with a hero, you have to have villains.
Right.
And the Confederacy is a villain for us, for people of color. And living in the South like we do and having lived in other countries in the world, I have never lived in a place like the South where they revel the Civil War and they lost.
Right.
And you know, they were the villains in the. So you're basically telling me that you're rooting for Lex Luthor. And everybody is all right with that. You know, you got the big Lex Luthor Confederate battle emblem. You got kryptonite. You got all this. And you're reveling in that. And the South shall rise again. What do you mean by that? Because the South rose on the backs of people that look like me. So when you say that to me, what I envision is me getting you before you get me, because that's what you're telling me. You're telling me that you are perfectly okay with the slavery and agrarian society that made it possible for your grandmother to sit out on a wraparound plantation porch and sip mint julep while my grandmother was in the fields making her lifestyle possible. Because what do you mean? The South should rise again. You know, we talk about Texas, and they talk about slavery was not the main point of the Civil War. And I agree. See, that's the thing I tell people. No, slavery was the main point for us, but them folks wasn't fighting over us.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting over the ability. They just didn't want slavery because it allowed the North to suffer under the tyranny of the idea that the South had a larger financial system.
Mm-hmm.
So if they could, and while we go around here talking about the Emancipation Proclamation and reveling Abraham Lincoln, that same man also said that he could have found a way to keep the Union together
without
freeing the slave. He would have. So when we would have these conversations that I'd be like, what part of history did you study? Or you only studied the part that fulfilled your requirements of yourself looking good? And I'd be like, yeah, no.
Right.
And that's like today.
No, I'm just saying that just goes back to the way history is told, right? Because I know it's like for the rest of the world, or I'm from Texas originally, right? And I heard the Confederacy, they were the villains, right?
Right.
They are the villains. But I came and moved to Mississippi, and then they have like the Confederate emblem in their state flag, and I'm like, when did that become okay?
You said when did it become okay? In Mississippi, it's always been okay. It became okay when you moved here. You just noticed it was okay. But all in southern states, the southern heritage is embraced in a way that I've never seen a culture embrace the losing side of a battle. Not only losing side, but a battle that was so morally screwed in the pact of saying that, hey, even though you're not fighting for us, but you're the best thing we got going to free us,
mm-hmm.
because we talk about Jim Crow after that. If it was, you know, if you really wanted to free the slaves, you would have made it possible for everything to bring them up to your level, but you didn't, because Jim Crow came after the rest of it, and the Civil Rights Movement was necessary, and all those things. So when you talk about people and you talk about the South, and I think this combines a lot of things we're talking about, because while I talk about the South and I talk about racism, do not get it wrong that I think there's no racism in the North. It's just a different kind of racism. It's like you were saying, when you're burning Nikes, that shows me who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the people that are sitting in decision-making positions that smile in your face, but say like, yeah, you're not getting this loan. Or we're not going to help you start your business. Or we're making decisions that have institutionalized racism that are truly another level of enemies. It's like you have foot soldiers and the people I can see and shoot, see, and then you have those people that hide behind veers of liberalism and progressivism and, you know, white allies, and all the time they make it just as difficult for you to succeed as a person of color.
Could you put most of that on our educational system?
No, I refuse.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to put most of it on our education system. I put it on us.
Right.
Because we are not. Melinda asked me a poignant question the other day about culture and how do you teach your children culture. It is the parent's responsibility to teach your children who you are. It is my responsibility to pass on the legacy of my family's history and therefore the bigger history in which we involved in, where we come from. Don't get me wrong. We are Americans. I hate to break it to people. Just talk about, we're Americans. I mean, I'm not saying that to be dismissive of Africa, but number one, it's 82 countries, I believe. So, you're just African. What part? Because you say you're an American, people always say, what part of America are you from? But we were kidnapped and drugged here. So let's get it right. It's like, I hate the kidnapping part, and I wish we could have evolved our own culture and we could be treated decently, but we wasn't. So let's skip over that. We are Americans. So we are in America, and I'm a black man in America. Let's get that established too. So we understand that the system was never designed for us and that actually it was designed to enslave us and to keep us oppressed. So we understand that. But in the bigger picture, we have to realize that, like you asked me, how we have to teach our children who we are, right? Where we came from. If you just allow the school system that you have always – I hate when I look at people and they all, the school system is racism. But what are you doing to combat it at home?
Right.
You know, my parents taught me who Harriet Tubman was. My parents taught me the truth of Nat Turner. My parents taught me, well, they allowed me to experience who Malcolm was, Elijah Spence. They allowed me that freedom also, but they taught me and instilled me and combated the negativity I encountered in the world and at school.
Mm-hmm.
They combated that with the truth. And therefore, you raise your children in an environment, well, yes, yeah, we need to learn how to read and write and all that, but you also put a foundation on a basis thereof. Our story did not start and end at slavery.
Right.
Or Jim Crow.
I feel like this will be a problem because, you know, both of you guys bring up some interesting points,
mm-hmm.
especially what you said, Melinda, about the villain. You know, and the good hero. You know, you look at a white household,
mm-hmm.
not all white people, but you take those who take dignity and pride in their heritage. The stories that I heard were extremely polar opposite to what they're being taught, that your great grandfather was such and such, and this is why. But, you know, they're not giving them to the full extent of that story of why. They're just
mm-hmm.
saying, this is what they did, this is why they're great, we have this and that. And go back to the black household and the black home, it's the total opposite.
It's the same story.
No, what who's being taught of the heroes.
Yeah, but it's the same story.
No. The heroes and the villains.
It's the same
story. The story is the same, but the heroes and villains.
So why? You ask yourself, why is that?
Because it's because of the narrative that is drawn between them. Because the narrative of who and what and how, first, how the country was founded and how the colonizers they get to paint the picture.
Right.
And they get to create the narrative of why America should stay great.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, America should stay great. But when you really look under that hat and you
mm-hmm.
see why America has really been great, they never tell that story. Because they decided to keep a hat on it and keep it covered to paint a picture of what America really isn't.
America,
you think Klansmen don't know that story?
They know it, but when you're teaching your kids and they're growing up hearing these stories, they hold true to what I hold true to, that my story is right and my story is correct.
That story is right, but that's the whole point. That story is right.
This
story is right. They have just made up their mind to accept it. See, just look at slavery for a minute, and you talk about heroes. When you're not thought of as human, when you're not thought of as subhuman,
yeah, that's true, man.
Then your narrative is right, because, number one, you're doing us a favor by kidnapping us and dragging us across the Atlantic in chains to work at. So your narrative is right for you because you are not looking at us as human. Of course, in actuality, in real life.
And go stop the video game simulation.
And y'all are debating some really great things, right? But which I'm gonna tie it back together with is internalized oppression. That's what we're witnessing right there.
Yeah.
We're talking about narratives. People internalize these things, and that's what keeps communities divided as well.
Because we have, and it goes like plantations, like cultures I was talking
mm-hmm.
about. But, and we have, and Melinda, and it's my best friend. Melinda's my best friend. And she's better looking than me, and I am.
Oh, stop.
What to do when you go, you can't help but shine.
That's right.
But you look at Melinda and I are best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And people will look at that and say, how are they best friends? Because we have come to realize culturally, number one, we share much more than
mm-hmm.
we differ.
Right.
But like she talks about that internalized oppression
mm-hmm.
is because we have all been oppressed so long that we start to believe we are, that's what you talk about, the narrative. We believe we deserve to be impressed because the narrative was told from the point that we were subhuman.
Yeah.
But now we have started, in doing that 400-year span, we started to internalize that we were less than human. And that's one thing, we start to believe the lies that the narrative
mm-hmm.
tells us about each other.
Right.
Which is why it's important for us to teach our children our culture and to be proud of it. so that they don't suffer from internalized oppression. Because there are certain people that don't. Right?
Yeah, overcome that. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't, one of the things I say is that you know how pro-black I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pro people of color. But I am pro people of color. But that doesn't mean I'm anti-white either.
Exactly.
See, that's what people, yeah, you know, people think because I speak of the greatness that we come from,
mm-hmm.
that I'm somehow putting down the Caucasus Mountain.
You have a whole God that looks like you.
Depicted in that narrative. But so, what were you saying? What did you say? The reality of it is that your God is from the Middle East.
Right.
And I just how I point that little narrative slipped out there. You have a God that looks. Well, you have a God.
Talk about border agents.
Yeah, let's talk about border agents. But like I like that, Melinda, in that internal oppression
mm-hmm.
that we have internalized, and it requires action. It requires vigilance. You know, I heard this lady was talking about she was raised in a racist society, the South, and how every day she had to actively fight
mm-hmm.
her growth, her experiences. It's like an alcoholic. You know, they tell you once you're an alcoholic, and even in recovery, it's a daily process.
It is.
And I think that's where you hit on it, because in order to systematically fight racism, you have to vanish and vanquish that part of internalized oppression,
mm-hmm.
That part that when you are around the oppressor and you bow down to them subconsciously because you are taught to be polite.
Why are you looking at me like that?
You just happen to sit across the table.
I don't like people to sit across the table. Everywhere we go from now on.
But it's not that, and it's like in this narrative right now where we're being taught that people can do all manner of things to us and we must remain civil.
Right.
Yeah. No. Let me tell you something. I'm not going to curse now, but I curse. And I will tell you that if you have your foot on my neck,
right,
you do not get to decide that I break every leg you have and a couple of fingers in the process of getting free from that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have these narratives now. People want to tell you, you must be civil. Can't you all learn to talk to each other? Number one, that might work for someone else. I think you all know how I feel about it. I don't think it's my job to talk to racists in a civil manner. I don't think it's my job to talk to racists in a civil manner. I don't think it's my job, because I'm never going to compromise with a racist.
Right.
I don't know what these, you know, we have these, let's come together and discuss our differences. I can mail you mine in. My differences are, you're racist and you believe in the oppression of people of color. I'm not. Because if I show up, what are we going to talk about? You're going to say, well, let's compromise on this and you could be my slave on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can be free on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. And we alternate Sundays. What kind of compromise is this again?
We're not here for your entertainment, right? We got bigger things to do.
Because I come there, I'm going to be there for somebody to entertain me. You're going to have a viral video. And you're going to be like, because I don't know what that compromise looks like. But we as people of color have always been taught that in the face of our personal adversity, that we turn the other cheek. And we allow. No. You know what I've learned in my 50 years of existence?
You only get 2 cheeks?
I only got 2. That's what she said. I only got 2. And if I allow you to hit 1, I'm not going there. If I allow you to hit 1 of them, I'm damaged.
Man.
So I live my life, and I carry my defenses to the point that, I'm not even going to allow you to hit 1 cheek. You're going to fight for it. Okay? So that's what we have to realize, that we have to stop with the passivity if we are truly in. You know, the American Revolution, this is always my point. The American Revolution taught me what?
That there is no such thing as a civil conversation.
There's no such thing as a people revolution.
Or a bloodless revolution.
Yeah, no such thing. Hey, you know, and people are going to just be mad at me because we're doing voter registration, and we're doing, you know, we're doing those activities we as a group, and we're partnered with several people here. But my thing is, and I'm going on record saying, because you all know how I feel, the bullet or the ballot is one of my favorite speeches by Malcolm. But let me ask you this. All this blue wave talk and all taking over the House and everything, what happens if the Democrats win? Democrats win the House, and they make steps in the Senate, and in 2 years they win the presidency. If we are still in the same position we are now, because midterm is going to tell me something, but if we're still in the same position we are now, because, you know, I don't know, racism disappeared when the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Yeah, okay. But anyway, I'm giving you a break from that. You know, it's been so long ago, Bill Clinton. We've been so long ago that people might not remember when the Democrats controlled everything. And by no, I made this statement and somebody asked me, does that mean you want the Republicans to win? No. If you can flash that from that, you're missing my point. My point is, in the American Revolution, there was a shot heard around the world. That was what it was called, the shot heard around the world. So in the event that nothing changes and people of color are still in the same position we're in, we're still separating people's families at the borders, we still have police brutality in the level we have it at, we still have a disproportionate wealth gap. How long do I need to give it after we win all these things before I say revolution is necessary? Before I get to the point where I say the ballot didn't work. I'm willing, and you know, I'm engaged in these voter registration drives you all are doing. But what happens when we remain disenfranchised?
Waiting?
What happens? That's my question I want to put out there. What happens if in the midterm elections, the blue wave does come through?
I mean, it's real. It's the thing is, people aren't planning for for Democrats to progress and move forward. They're not planning what to do afterwards. You know,
who
was
planning?
Like you said with integration.
Right. So fast integration.
Exactly. So when we get to, I feel like when we get to this point of in a political position to make changes. Everybody's trying to get to that point to where they can get their seats, where they can get nominated, where they can hold House in some sort, but they're not making their strategic plan of what to do afterwards for the next 5 years or plus 4 years.
So as the young one here, so what was the excuse 10 years ago?
10 years ago?
Yes. What was the excuse?
10 years ago, I was trying to graduate.
You were, but what
was
the excuse of the people that were in power as Democrats then? What was their excuse when they didn't fix DACA when they had the chance, when they had a Democratic Senate and Democratic Congress and Democratic? Exactly. So my question still remains.
Exactly.
I'm not saying you, but why don't we just start a revolution tomorrow?
Hey, guys.
People aren't ready for
it. Yes, sir. Nathan. Yeah, I have like 45 seconds left.
All right. Okay, sir. So we're going to wrap it up.
Okay.
We'll wrap it up. And we'll give. Thank you, Ken. All right.
Thank you, guys.
I'm going to let him wrap
it up. Thank you. Okay.
And thank you all for being with us
today. The villain in my life, is the institutions that has been set up for white privilege. It's the institutions that have been established to be, now I might sound paranoid, but anti-black male. Look at our criminal justice system. Look at the political system. And to me, there's no difference between a Democrat and a Republican. Sorry about that.
And you're right. And my thing is that it's anti people of color, period. Those systems have used the same formula for all of us. And by keeping us divided, they ensure that they stay in power.
Right. And that's why change doesn't happen, because it's not about the people. It's actually about the system. So.
Yeah, it's the system, right.
The policy is what's created by them. Mm-hmm.
So this is T. Nathan Fairley.
Melinda Medina.
Reginald Virgil.
And thank you for joining us for our inauguration program of Keep Calm, Let's Discuss Racism.
Y'all have a good night.
And we will check back with y'all soon.
Peace.
Deuces.